Welcome to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Now, your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
Happy New Year, everybody. We're back with another fun-filled year of M Squared TechCast shows, right, Mike?
Yeah, I think this is 110.
Okay. Well, we've been off the air for a couple of weeks because Christmas and New Year's Day were both on a Monday this year, and that's when our show is. So,
and Jessica refused to work on New Year's Day, so I put it all on her.
Jessica Cratchit over here.
Right? Ah, humbug! Yeah. That's what she said to me, you know? So what's that all about? I don't know.
But, okay.
So we have calling in from a very long ways away, my social media partner, Bailey Ostele from Smart Finds Marketing. Although his office is in Birmingham, he's physically elsewhere.
And where would that be, Maley? Where are you
right
now?
Where are you today? Are you?
I'm in Europe. I got nothing better to do.
Okay, sounds good.
I think you're at the Côte d'Azur down there, right? You're like, you get one of those Speedos on and you're hanging out of the Mediterranean,
oh,
right?
I don't want to think about him in a Speedo. I really don't right now. So.
Hey, guys, you know, look, I've been in the internet industry now for 25 years, and at the end of the day, it's a global market, and the internet's global, so I see no reason why I need to be stuck in one place the entire time.
Right. Well, you could do anything from anywhere now.
Our global man. And also, a business partner on a project that you brought to me originally, and now we're shopping it around to, in fact, have one beta test site already in Ann Arbor and hopefully another one coming up here. I believe it's in Holland. But it's your program for Conquest Auto Sales. So why don't we – well, people might not understand. What is Conquest Auto Sales? Why don't you go ahead and explain it?
So one of the things we started doing at Smart Finds Marketing in the last year is developing a new program for car dealerships. I mean, let's face it. We're headquartered in the Motor City, so why would we not have a program for dealerships, right? So one of the things that has been going on in the last 5 years in the digital space is this concept of conquest programs for dealerships. In other words, how can dealerships reach consumers within, let's say, a 20-mile radius of their store and consumers who have not done business with them previously? Up till... Okay. The last, I mean, really, if you think about conquest programs in general, most of them are executed by tech companies executing technology tasks and services. And needless to say, conquest programs within the dealership world have not had a great response. Why? Because this is actually a marketing process in which there should be marketing activity. And this brings me to the, you know, you guys have heard me talk about this before, where my fellow baby boomers are very focused on advertising, for example. They're very focused on the fact that, oh, there's a keyboard in front of this marketing tool, and immediately they turn to tech companies to execute the tasks and the services. What's missing around all this is a strategy. What's missing is a marketing process that you're going to follow so that you understand what are you measuring and what are the results and whether or not it's working. And what's missing are the marketing activities that are involved in that process. So what we did at Smart Finds in the last year is we kind of opened this up to say, look, these conquest programs do have something. It's not that they're bad. It's the fact that we need to add something to the front end and the back end of these things. Let's make this into a marketing process. And, you know, talking to my fellow BB boomers, let's look at it from this standpoint. At what point in history has a printer ever been your ad agency? And this is what this is exactly what we run into in the in the digital space, is the fact that the tech guys, the tech companies are really the printers. So why would you have them? Why would you assume that they are your ad agency? You still need a marketing company in front of all this. You still need a strategy. You still need to understand how you're going to measure all these things. And I think the expectations, you know, really fall short when people assume that the tech guys can execute this, the process, and they really can't. And so that's kind of where we started to build on this new program that we call Smart One, and it's for dealerships, where we are taking six individual activities, bringing them into a single solution to build out a conquest program that is much better and well-rounded. So, for example, we make sure that we have a press release inside of this that goes to the news networks within that geography. We throw in social media marketing. We throw in content marketing. Then we have two email blasts that go into this project based on the volume of people around their store that we can reach, followed by Facebook targeting. And when I say Facebook targeting, I'm not just talking about running advertising. The databases are well rounded in terms of being able to identify people's email addresses, which we can then match to a Facebook account so that we can target those individuals. And the same thing goes on with Google Ads, in which we're targeting people based on their profiles that we have available to them. So if you take all six of these, mash them all up, and execute it, then we have a conquest program that actually is a marketing program, not just a technology task. So that's really what we've been working on. One of the projects, amongst others, that we've been working on is Smart Finds Marketing, putting together Smart One together for dealerships. We do have a program that we're going to be starting here this month out in Ann Arbor. And then we have another one that's starting in February out in Grand Rapids to kind of introduce this into the Michigan market.
And what I suppose we should go into, it involves guarantees. That really is what makes it different, right? That it has a guarantee?
Yeah, Mike, thank you. Great point. One of the things that we worked on with the dealerships, and we've had we've had experience in the dealership world through Penske Automotive Group in our past. What we did was we told the dealerships that we're going to guarantee them X number of sales for the program that we're executing. So, for example, if we're going to guarantee 20 car sales over 8 weeks, or 20 car sales over 4 weeks, or 30 car sales over whatever time frame, and the program fee is based on that guarantee. Now, what we are willing to do with the dealerships to kind of cut out all the crutches is, if we fall short, let's say it's a 20-car guarantee program and we only get to 15 cars, then we will refund them 5 cars worth of the budget. However, on the other side, let's say that it's a 20-car guarantee and we're able to sell 30 cars, we do not charge them for the additional 10.
But it's the social media element that's really the new wrinkle, right? That's what you're bringing to the party?
Well, actually, there's three new parts of the puzzle, because most conquest programs only have three parts. In other words, they only do email marketing, or let's say they do direct mail. And then they may or may not do Facebook, and they may or may not do. We're bringing to the mix is the press release. The number one consumed item on the internet in terms of information is news. Everybody turns into news. So why not take your conquest program and get it into the news networks for the local market? Then we support that with content marketing. In other words, we're doing distribution of that press release and all of its elements, let's say videos, let's say images, graphics, photos, whatever is related to the program. Maybe there are banner images as well. And then we take it one step further and make sure that the social communities are aware of this. As you can imagine, we're going to focus heavily into the Facebook side of things in this, probably Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest will be on the top of the list as well. So we're trying to bring in the marketing communication side of this, not just executing, let's say, a bunch of emails.
Okay. Go ahead, Matt. You have a question?
Yeah, I was just wondering how long it took you to come up with this and sort of what the genesis for the idea was.
That's a good question, Matt. You know what really happened? Since we're a digital marketing agency, in the last several years, I have had these tech companies that do these conquest programs reach out to us. They know we work with car dealerships, and they wanted to partner with us. And over the years, I keep on asking them this question and that question. And we try to drill into whether or not, you know, are they real? Can they really execute on what they're talking about? And in all cases, they always fell short. Partly because, you know, as we've seen in a lot of technologies, all these items are new, right? So when new technology comes to play or anything new comes into the tech world or the digital marketing world, it doesn't start off very well. It's clunky. Things need, you know, it needs to mature. It needs to evolve. So as time progressed and these services did mature and they did evolve, they became a little bit better in terms of what they're doing. We did come across a partner firm out of Portland, Oregon, that at the end of the day, I found they actually had their piece of the puzzle figured out.
Okay.
Now it was a matter of adding the marketing to it.
All right, Mailey, we're out of time for this segment, so we're going to have to leave it there. Real quick, if people want more information, if people want more information on this product, where do they go on the web?
Go to smartfindsmarketing.com.
All right. Thanks very much, social media expert Mailey Ostale from Smart Finds Marketing in Birmingham, sharing with us some interesting information on a new product for right now. We'll be right back in just a minute. But for right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you are listening to the M Squared TechCast.
Lawrence Technological University graduates earn a degree and a higher starting salary. In fact, when it comes to earning potential, the Brookings Institution ranks LTU fifth among U.S. colleges and universities. Be enriched. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
As a Lawrence Technological University graduate, you're not only marketable, you're worth more. Yes, more. According to payscale.com, when it comes to graduate salaries, LTU is in America's top 100. Be invaluable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Hey, it's Mike Brennan.
And Matt Rausch.
Frog in his throat here, but man, you're listening to
Kermit
M Squared.
Frog,
M Squared TechCast on the Podcast Detroit Network, and we have standing by. I know you're in California, and I hope it's really lousy weather out there. Is it, Richard, or not? Is it good?
Yeah, no, it's crummy. It's 60 degrees and raining.
It never rains in California.
I know it. I heard that in a song somewhere. We should probably give people the rest of his name. Richard Steenen, who is with IT Harvest, a longtime partner of mine on books and all sorts of things, and started the original RustNet. People don't even realize that.
Yeah, back in the days of the local ISP.
Yes,
back
through the call-up days. Be-dum. Yeah, that's right. I remember those. So, but today he's out in California. I'm not sure exactly. Are you at a conference now?
Nope. I'm visiting a client. We're working on a new book project.
Ooh, okay.
Oh, cool. Yeah. All right. Well, your one of your books, There Will Be Cyber War, scared the living crap out of me. So, you know.
Doesn't take much with Matt, though.
No, you know, true. So. Little timid.
Yeah. So, but speaking of scaring the crap, I can do it. You know, first show of the year, and I just,
It's been 3 weeks, man.
That's all, folks.
Let me look up that Stephen Colbert clip from Bruce Almighty.
So scaring people, I mean, that's exactly what's been, in 2017, I mean, just one major hack after another.
Yeah, it was a crazy year, and looks like 2018's shaping up to outdo 2017 easily.
Wow, really? How so? What are you seeing in your crystal ball?
Well, last week we heard of two new vulnerabilities that impact just about every computer, including every cell phone. They're called Meltdown and Spectre. So two similar but different.
Those are great. Those are great names to scare the crap out of you.
Fundamental flaw in the way these chips are designed to do their computing. It's very esoteric, but they're expecting there to be some pretty sophisticated attacks against them, and it's going to allow an attacker to steal your passwords and stuff right off your computer if you browse to the wrong site, or if you get served the wrong advertisement. That's right now the theory is that it'll be served up through malvertising. So you'll be going to CNN or I don't know if you guys run ads on Into TechCast.
We try to.
Somebody will go there in the ad network. The ad network will serve up bad ads that infect people and steal their stuff.
Oh,
wonderful.
Gosh, we can't do anything on the internet anymore, right?
What I've heard about this too, Richard, is that one of these flaws to really fix it, we have to almost change the way we make chips. I mean, this is serious stuff.
Yeah. This was the tax method that was built into these chips to make them faster, and the patch is to remove that thing. It's called speculative computing or speculative branching. Which is kind of a weird concept, but once you apply the patch, which Amazon and Microsoft and Apple are doing right now, it conceivably can slow down those systems. So I'm getting reports from people who run thousands of servers on Amazon that their CPU utilization is going way up by 20% to 40%, which means that the patch could be an economic disaster, because if computing costs skyrocket by 20 to 40% overnight, that's going to have some serious implications.
Huh.
Hmm. Yikes. Well, Spectre was a Bond villain organization, so I guess that makes sense. So the other one, there is a software patch for, right, though?
Yeah, there's a software patch for both Meltdown and Spectre, though Spectre's harder to patch and is more widespread because it covers, so Meltdown primarily impacts Intel chips, and Spectre impacts Intel and AMD and IBM's I-series. So there's a lot of chips out there. The number is being estimated at 3 billion. I think it's closer to 5 billion chips. And this problem is now just what's going to stick with us for, it'll take decades to get those systems, replaced. So this is just going to be the way of life in the future.
And the bad guys are going to have a great time, right?
Yeah, especially the more sophisticated ones. Of course, somebody will develop a way to spread a worm or install ransomware, starting with an attack of this sort, and probably leveraging some other vulnerabilities that we knew about chips beforehand. And if you thought WannaCry was something worth talking about, this is even more so.
So, I mean, is there any way to defeat this other than this patch? Is there do you have to replace the chip or what?
Well, it takes 5 or 6 years to create a new chip family. So I think, and besides that, they got to figure out how to, come up with a way to get chips to be as fast without this vulnerability. The industry's kind of scratching its head. They're going, now what?
Yeah, absolutely. So great start to the year. I mean, what else do you see out there on the horizon? You were saying you think that 2018 is going to be worse than 2017, which, of course, is kind of hard to believe, but who knows?
Yeah. Yeah, well, there's we still have the lovely shadow brokers sitting out there. So these are a hacking team, most probably Russians, that earlier in the year released a whole bunch of essentially source code for NSA exploits, and one of those was used for WannaCry, the ransomware that spread so rapidly. And they could be sitting on a bigger trove of other stuff like that they could release that uses so-called zero-day vulnerabilities at the end of the that I developed and never thought to tell anybody about. So that's always looming over us now. And of course, there's a couple other hacking groups that have similar access to pretty cool stuff. So you could be seeing outbreak after outbreak.
Hmm. So who are the culprits here? Is it mostly organized crime or state actors, or what do you see as the fastest growing group of culprits?
Yeah, I see the state actors getting more and more involved. And unfortunately, the way, when a state actor is using it, we can call them cyber weapons, even though they're using them for mostly surreptitious, espionage kind of stuff. But turns out they're not as good as keeping their secrets as they would like to be. And they're leaking out, which is kind of inevitable, right? It's, you can't really keep a secret that long. If you ever use one of these exploits, somebody's got evidence that it was used, and they might collect enough data to reverse engineer it. So you've got the state actors doing all the investment up front to discover vulnerabilities, create exploits against them, and then they get out, of course, and then the cyber criminals jump on board and start leveraging them to make money. And of course, all the excitement over Bitcoin towards the end of 2017.
Yeah, there was a big run up and then a big letdown, right? So
yeah, where is that now? I lost track of where it's priced at. It was like 15-ish, somewhere in that ballpark.
Yeah, it hit a high of about 18, and then it dropped down to 15, and everybody said, "Oh, it crashed." But not somebody who bought it for $1,000 in January. They're pretty happy with $15,000.
Or a couple of years ago, you could buy it for about $300.
Yeah, and in the beginning,
dig it up for pennies.
Yeah, dig it up for nothing.
That's true. Just think about somebody bought it for 10 cents, and now where are they at? Well, that's called a return on investment.
Yep. I saw one estimate that the mysterious guy who invented Bitcoin, who nobody knows who he is, but we know how many Bitcoins he has. He has about a million of the first Bitcoins.
Oh my God!
And that's worth $18 billion.
Oh my gosh!
At one point, he was the 40th richest person in the world based on Bitcoins.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously he couldn't, turn them into dollars or all at once, but a little at a time. You're making a pretty nice living for yourself. Good grief.
Yeah, you could. But he hasn't used them. Everybody watches that wallet, and they haven't been used at all. So.
Huh, okay.
It's my theory that he's Satoshi Nakamoto, the guy who authored the white paper that turned into Bitcoin. It's my theory that he's from the future. So he came back and started Bitcoin, and he has some purpose for it in the future.
You just gave me an idea for my next novel. So that's where we should take
it. I knew I should have
Bitcoin Time Bandits, man.
I love it. I mean, we're going to have Yvonne Tran is going to be going from into the future here so she can rip people up.
Yep.
That was our cyber stiletto character.
Book. All right.
I love it. I never would have thought of something like that,
That's very cool.
Yeah. So what else is on the horizon that we should be – I mean, let's talk about, all this stuff is going on and everyone's getting scared to death. They don't know who to listen to, what to do, how to take care of themselves. What are some basics for how to protect yourself from getting hacked by these bad guys? Of course, now if you get a bad chip, what are you going to do, right? But, I mean, other than that, what can folks do?
Well, there's always the usual advice of – accept the software updates for your phone and your PC and your MacBook as soon as they're offered, which right now is pretty critical. And then I always tell people to use two-factor authentication. So somebody might steal your login credentials to your Gmail account or your bank account, but if your bank offers to authenticate you with a text message to your phone, definitely do that. That's a really good defense. A new piece of advice is definitely use an ad blocker. So this is how this new breed is going to spread and steal stuff from people. So use an ad blocker and then, start pushing back on the websites that don't let you in because you're using an ad blocker. There's a lot of them. Forbes, for one of them, is probably the worst culprit. And, force them to figure out a different way to monetize what they do.
They'll end up charging you. Or at least Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Chicago Tribune, a few of the big boys charge nominal fees, subscription fees.
Yeah, and a few of the little guys, yep, too, like my old Country Weekly up in northern Michigan, the Leelanau Enterprise.
No kidding.
Is mostly paywalled now. So is the St. Ignace News. A lot of the little Country Weeklies are, but those are fiercely devoted, loyal, albeit small, readerships, and they're willing to pay for it. You know, people are willing to pay for it. The guy who was the other reporter at the Leelanau
Enterprise.
It's crazy
to do. It's crazy because they're in the business of, you know, getting their stuff read. And they're telling people, you know, don't bother linking this on Twitter because anybody clicks on it, it's going to be paywalled.
It's paywalled.
Nobody's going to be interested in paying a local newspaper for access.
Yeah, well, most of them have a certain number of articles you can get a month for the casual reader.
Right. Ten or so. That's New York Times.
Right.
Yeah, and it's the same with some of these little country weeklies.
So here's my idea. You should offer to your paid subscribers the ability to share a link that anybody can read.
Ah, that's a nifty idea.
Those paid subscribers will get more followers on Twitter and Facebook because they have good links. Hmm. And people will know they can click on links provided by those people.
And they get other people. They get other people interested in your product. Oh, Bitcoin. Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah. Cryptocurrencies.
Yep.
Yeah. Right,
there's a digital currency called Steam that's designed just to do that. So it allows content providers to compensate content creators.
All right, we got about 30 seconds left. If folks want to reach out to you, Richard, why don't you provide your contact information?
You can find me on Twitter at Cyberwar. That's the best way to get a hold of me.
Okay, and then right now you're sunning yourself in California, but we'll see you back in Michigan soon, right?
Yeah, I'll be back soon.
Okay, sounds
back to
great.
The cold.
Yes, back to the cold.
Well, today it's shorts weather here. It's getting up close to 40 degrees.
Yeah, I know people had convertible tops when I was coming in, you know. So, all right, well, that's Richard Steenan, our cybersecurity ace from Birmingham. Two Birminghams today, right?
Yeah.
And so this is Mike Brennan.
And Matt Rausch.
And you've been listening to M Squared TechCast.
We'll be right back.
Oh, I like that. All together. Yeah.
What do you get at Lawrence Technological University? Everything. Great labs and studios, supportive professors, plus a full campus life, NAIA athletics, and all the software you need to succeed. Be smart. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Lawrence Technological University is all about opportunities. You learn beyond the campus, doing real-world research for top companies and honing your skills through co-ops and internships. Apply what you learn. Be challenged. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Hey, it's Mike Brennan.
And Matt Rausch.
And Matt's got one of his employers on the phone. Hit the bell there.
That's our shameless plug bell whenever we have the M Squared TechCast or anywhere in the PodcastDetroit.com family. Plug our day job, and mine is Director of Media Relations at Lawrence Technological University.
You can do it. Yeah.
That's a fine STEAM school in Southfield, Michigan. And we have on the line with us our Dean of Students, Kevin Finn. There's a lot of cool stuff going on in terms of student life at Lawrence Tech. And since it is science, technology, engineering, arts, architecture, and math centric, it applies to this show. And Kevin, first of all, you wanted to talk about Lawrence Tech's sort of transition from commuter school to residential school. And there's a big project going up right now, right, that is part of that.
Sure, yes. Yes, we're building another residence hall. So we added a unit 2 years ago for our 150 freshmen, and we're adding another one that will be opening up this August in 2018 that will provide beds for another 300 students. So what we have found and the reason that we have transitioned to being a traditional or residential campus is more students out of high school are seeking that an opportunity to live on campus. They prefer that rather than commuting. And we also find the students that live in housing units tend to graduate on time, which is important to them and their parents. Spend less time to achieve that goal. They also tend to have higher GPAs, and they see that their college experience is more meaningful and complete. So those are always good factors as well.
Okay. So tell me about this residence hall a little bit. What are some of the sort of interesting and unique features of it?
Sure. Well, you know, residence halls are, you know, not the traditional dorm that everyone thinks of, just like a cot and a space to do study in. They're about community spaces more than anything. In other words, you want the students to sleep in their rooms, obviously, to do some studying there, but you also want to see them interacting with their classmates and building partnerships and, you know, and working on their ideas together. So in our next unit, it'll have a few different things that will provide opportunities for professors to teach courses inside the unit or to do discussion groups. It will also have places for recreation. It will have a full fitness center inside it. It'll have a full kitchen area where students can do some cooking and some planning. It has a bike garage. Many of our students bring bicycles with them to campus. And like this time of year, you don't like to leave it outside. So they will actually be able to store their bikes in the garage there and check them out when they need to use them. The outside of the building is really cool. You can actually display on the outside walls. You can actually project movies on it and stuff. So again, another way to bring students together and build relationships. And, you know, we always talk about, you know, many different fashions. The more times those students spend together, or at least I think of my wife when she went to school, a couple of her roommates were people that, and suite mates were students that they started an architectural firm with. We see that same thing happen here. Students who work together, they build ideas, they're very entrepreneurial. So we build these housing units for that. They're getting out and they're getting to know each other and they have those opportunities. They'll have a music room as well as another feature in it. And then what's really important nowadays with all students, a gaming room. They all play some form of video game. And we'll have a room that's all set up for that as well.
All right. And I also understand there'll be bicycle repair equipment in the dorm?
Yeah, there definitely will be. We are very lucky. We have a donor that gave us money for that. And there will be a couple different stations set up so that tires can be repaired, broken chains, those type of things. And that will be at the new unit, but also outside our current unit in South Housing as well.
All right. And talking about how students that live together in college wind up doing things together after college, that's sort of the story with the architectural firm that designed the building, correct?
That is correct. That is a good point. You know, the students that now alums, yes, they went to classes together, and Inform Architecture, obviously, is the name of the firm. And they were actually, one of them was a member of our hockey team at one point. The one alum was also teaching, so they got to know each other and kind of put it together from there. So, yeah, it's excellent.
Yeah, there's also a married couple involved, I know, right? You see that a lot.
Correct.
Too. Yeah. And that's INFORM. Where are they based out of? I think is it Northville or Plymouth? I couldn't remember.
Plymouth.
Off the top of my head. Plymouth. It is Plymouth. Okay, great. Yep. And it's kind of a unique design. It's like 2 4-story towers with sort of a bridge in between them, right? And yeah, that's
correct.
That's kind of that. I thought that was interesting. And there's apparently, you know, from looking at how the construction proceeded before they got it buttoned up to the weather, and now you can't see into it at the moment, but it looked like there were big multi-story open spaces in the interior of the building.
Correct. Yeah, I went on a tour right before we took a break here in December. And yeah, so like a community space where students might come together to study or to practice music, work on a PowerPoint together, you'll see that they share into 2 floors. That way we're bringing them together. What you don't want to make the mistake of is make it so comfortable that the students don't leave their room. And you also don't want them to just focus on their floor. So those spaces are set up in a way that if I'm on floor 2, it's very easy for me to connect with somebody on floor 1 as well, or floor 3 or floor 4, and vice versa.
Okay. And there's not food service directly in the building, but there will be kitchens, right? You mentioned that.
There is a, yes. So the students will use our food program we have on campus, which we're very excited. We're going to be announcing some more changes to that in the upcoming year. But there is spaces for them to prepare meals to take back to the room. So if I'm late night studying and it's 3 a.m. and I'm hungry, I could go, you know, make a DiGiorno pizza, whoever I might choose at that point. There'd be, you know, those spaces available for them as well.
Okay. And once this building is done, roughly how many students will we have living on campus?
So right now we are right over 800. We'll be just over 1,000 students at that time.
Okay, so yeah, close to 1,100 is what I had heard. That's
correct.
That's a fairly substantial number of people, and I think it's having an impact on the community. We've had a bunch of new businesses open up in that part of Evergreen that's just north of 10 Mile there, right?
Correct. 7-8 years ago when we started really committing to become a residential campus, Evergreen was a lot different too.
Yeah.
I think the first anchor business to start there was Tim Hortons and Subway. And now there's like 15 different restaurants you can pick from. And almost all of them offer discounts to our students. And many of them, when they were making a decision to locate here, it was based on the fact that there were college students real close by. I know that was the case for Papa John's and Wingstop. Jimmy John's is also, those are very intentional decisions, knowing that those type of students are there, and Tropical Smoothie, who just moved in as well.
So what's the total headcount at the LTU now? How many total students do you have?
We usually report we're right around 4,200 or 4,200 students, and our goal is to get up to 5,000 students.
Ah, okay.
All right, and stay tuned on the plans for more residence halls. I'm sure there's you know ideas being looked at, but try this for a transition here, Kevin. To get to those businesses on Evergreen, Lawrence Tech students have to walk past the Point, which is the intersection of 10 Mile Road, Northwestern Highway, and Evergreen Road. That's where our athletic field is, and that athletic field is getting a brand new team this fall. Kevin, let's talk about that a little bit.
Nice segue.
Sure. Yes. Next year, we will be adding our football program, the first team that will compete in over 70 years. And they will play, they open up September 1, so Labor Day weekend next year. We're actually playing Oakland University. A lot of people forget Oakland University does have a club football team that competes, and we're playing them. We have a 10-game schedule next year. We play Northern Michigan next year, then some schools out of Iowa and North Dakota and Ohio. The following year, we join our formal conference, and we'll play locally Concordia, Siena Heights, and Madonna. Looks like they're going to be adding football, too. But we're really excited. Number one is it's been many students who have come here. It's because of the opportunity for our education. But many times football is that one sport that many people don't play after high school again. So that opportunity to study here and get a good degree in engineering or architecture, whatever their choice might be, but also to play football has been very influential to these young men. And many have chosen us over a different school because of that. And we're also adding a marching band as well as the and support groups to go with it.
All right. So that dorm better get done because they're going to have a whole bunch of new people on campus, huh?
That dorm is not done. I'm in trouble.
Yeah. Hey, now, Matt tells me he still has eligibility left, and so you're going to let him play on the football team. Is that right?
Only you know, I would be loath to be anything but a kicker.
You know, there is a funny story with that. Our coach, Coach Dubendeck, he coached before at a school in Missouri, and he did have a player on his team that was 40 years old as nose guard. So you never know. Matt's feeling up to it. Our coach will give him a tryout.
A 40-year-old nose guard at a college team. How about that? Well,
if you've got a good shot.
I don't think my wife would not approve of that for me.
Yeah. I'm sure those guys would break me like a twig. I've seen some of those guys.
Oh, they're
but
huge,
yeah. Well, Duvendek's thing, though, isn't necessarily size. I know his team's,
right.
He's always coached speed. He's, you know, speed is the one thing he's after. So these guys are going to be jackrabbit quick.
Speed and intelligence.
Yeah.
He was telling me one of his biggest advantages he feels with this school is and the students he's received. He says, Kevin, to play that at other schools, I'd have to take 10 or 15 times to practice to get them to remember is a lot less here. I got some really smart young men on the team, and it's going to make a difference for us when we compete.
Yeah, that's one thing my son told me about high school football is that, Dad, you wouldn't believe how many guys just can't remember the plays. So. I don't think that'll be
a problem.
I think the
Lions have done that a few times when I watched it.
They do that all the time. That's the problem.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
Absolutely. So we are also looking to build an improved athletic facility. We've got a beautiful AstroTurf field turf field there right now, but we're looking to add a little stadium there, right?
That is correct. Just got done emailing our city planner to go over plans. We're looking to build a 3,500-seat stadium out there, and we're also looking to partner with some local high schools who have expressed a need to have a home field on Friday nights. So we see that happening. It will support not only the football team but also our soccer team. And as you know, Matt, our men's soccer team had a really good season this year.
Yep.
And it will also support our men's and women's lacrosse, both who are nationally ranked. So you should see activity out there year-round, and then we also will do camps and stuff during the summertime. We need, you know, the permanent bleachers and lights, and then the locker room facilities are so important. And to be honest, nowadays these young men and women are playing at some very nice facilities in high school.
Yeah.
We just got to keep up the pace as well.
Yeah, I know the high school that my kids went to in Dearborn just put up a $900,000 team building that has really nice locker rooms and, you know, concession area that's food service compliant and, you know, all of that good stuff.
Wow.
So if that's, you know, if that's what you get at the high school level, then, you know, we got to keep up with that too. So
there's an arms race, no doubt about it.
Yes.
All right. So if people want more information about LTU Athletics, about the football and other programs, where should they go online?
You know, we have a webpage for LTUathletics.com, and you can connect with every one of our coaches and our athletic director as well. And they can always just call me as well or email me at kfinn@ltu.edu.
That's K-F-I-N-N, folks. And also, because we are a member not of NCAA Division III, but we are in the NAIA, that's the other college sports sanctioning organization. I think it's the National Association for Intercollegiate Athletics. Is that it?
That is correct.
Yeah, because we're a member of the NAIA, even though we're a small school, we can offer athletic scholarships, correct?
That is correct. We definitely offer athletic scholarships.
Okay.
And, you know, we don't offer full rides in athletic, but we do combine our athletic and our academic scholarships, and it definitely lessens those costs towards the education. And there's some really competitive scholarships that are offered, and makes people's life a little bit easier. So definitely.
Yep, absolutely. And this year in winter sports, I guess the women's basketball team's doing really well.
Yeah, they're nationally ranked. They won a game again on Saturday, and men's team finally won. They were having a little bit of a rougher start, but the women's team is in the top 20, and we're expecting them to compete for their conference title and then attend the nationals. They're very good. I would say to anybody, let's go to that athletics website. I mentioned LTUathletics.com. When we're home on a Wednesday or Saturday, the women's teams and their games are great, great entertainment.
Yep. Yeah, it's $5.
And there's no charge.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a fun thing to go watch. We got a great little pep band, and you know, it's a neat atmosphere. All right, we are out of time. We'll have to leave it there, but thanks very much for being with us today. Lawrence Technological University, Dean of Students, Kevin Finn. Thanks, Kevin.
Have a great day.
All right, thanks. For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you've been listening to the M Squared TechCast.
Lawrence Technological University is more than a school. It's a launchpad for your future, offering industry-leading facilities and 100-plus programs that are ranked among the nation's best. Be unstoppable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Lawrence Technological University graduates earn a degree and a higher starting salary. In fact, when it comes to earning potential, the Brookings Institution ranks LTU 5th among U.S. colleges and universities. Be enriched. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back with our final segment for today on the M Squared TechCast. We have with us a longtime friend of the TechCast. We have Enrico Schaefer of Traverse City's DroneLaw.pro. And he's going to talk to us about the latest doings in the drone market, both commercial and hobbyist. Welcome, Enrico.
Hey, guys. How are you doing today? Happy 2018.
Yeah, thanks, happy to you too.
We were off while we were waiting to queue up. We were talking about the snow in Traverse City. How deep is it?
You know, it's a good 3 to 4 feet in most places, and a little warm stretch coming here, but it is nothing but magic up here right now.
Yeah, I was saying earlier, I was in the Muskegon area for New Year's visiting family over there, and that's considerably farther south than you, but boy, is it ever in the bullseye for the lake effect. And we were just driving around looking at how pretty it was on everything, on all the pine trees. And we went by this house where the snow had drifted off the southern edge of the roof to the point where it was covering up the windows below. It was hanging down like 5 feet off the edge of this house. And it was hanging all over everything because it was so cold. It was really the light and fluffy stuff, you know. I guess that's easier to shovel, but it's beautiful. Yeah, I got a sister-in-law in Interlock, and she sent me some pictures, too, that are pretty crazy. What's the latest?
Yes,
the latest in drone law? I guess we could start with the commercial market, since this is kind of a businessy show.
Sure, sure. So the commercial market is fairly well solidified right now. There's the regulatory framework that we've all been operating under for about 16 months now. That's the Part 107 rules, which really kind of lay out what you can and cannot do with a commercial application of a drone. And we've got a few little initiatives. As you probably saw, President Trump, at least verbally, has indicated his support to try and increase the pace of what they call drone integration, which just means allowing drones to fly in the sky, right? So he issued an executive order, which then has created this UAS integration pilot program. And what it seeks to do is to, and there's legislation which would make this a congressional act potentially as well, but what it seeks to do is to incentivize local governments and municipalities to create zones where you can go and fly beyond Part 107. So things like as we've discussed before, you can't fly beyond line of sight under Part 107 without special permission. You can't fly over people without special permission if you're doing a commercial operations. Well, what this UAS integration pilot program seeks to do is to say, okay, let's say Traverse City wants to allow flights over people and or flights that are beyond line of sight. They can create a pilot program to allow that, create safety standards around that, and then companies can go to Traverse City in order to conduct operations beyond line of sight or over people, right? So there was a big pushback. We didn't want local governments and municipalities to get involved in regulating drones because they were trying to reduce the number of flights that could occur. And the FAA said, no, we have exclusive jurisdiction over the skies. Therefore, local governments and municipalities, you may not regulate drones. Didn't stop a lot of localities from doing so, but that would be litigated up through the courts, and at least from the FAA's point of view, those regulations would be struck down. Well, now under this new program, which is in the beginning phases of really getting rolling, this UAS integration pilot program, you could, as a municipality, decide you want to bring commercial drone activity to your area, you want to incentivize it, you want to spur commerce in your area concerning UAS, and therefore you can go ahead and try and launch one of these pilot programs in order to allow more types of commercial operations than currently generally available from the FAA. So that's kind of a big development because it kind of turns the issue on its head from states and municipalities are bad for drones to the potential that states and municipalities might be good for drones.
What's going on in the hobbyist world then? I mean, that sort of commercial, same rules in hobbyists? You have to go through all this stuff?
No. So hobby drones are much are different in terms of regulations. So hobby drones are regulated under Section 336, whereas commercial drones are regulated under Part 107. So if you are a hobbyist and you're flying your drone just for fun, you have a much easier set of rules to fly under. Okay. Now, you have to fly consistent with community standards, which can mean a lot of different things, but generally it's a looser rule than what you have under Part 107 to allow people to go out and fly for fun. The interesting thing that's happened is you might recall that about a year and a half ago, the FAA issued a rule that required all hobbyists to register their drones. And for a $5 fee, you would get into the registration system. They'd give you a number to put on your recreational drone. And in case anything bad happened, they'd theoretically be able to trace the number back to you. And therefore, your responsibility would kick in. The courts struck that down. And so now Congress has come back and fixed that to allow the FAA to again require registration of recreational drones. So if you registered before, your login to the FAA website for your registration and your registration number remain the same. If you're flying drones for fun and you haven't registered the drone, you may be violating the law. So what you want to do is you want to go to the FAA website and you'll see the link on how to register your recreational drone. You need to be 13 years or older in order to register. And if someone's flying the drone that's not 13 years old, then their parent or another adult has to register the drone for them. And you're basically going to provide your email address, a credit card for the $5, a physical address and mailing address, and then you'll be within the modeler registration system. And all of that's good because we do want accountability. We know that the general public is viewing drones with some skepticism and concern. Mm-hmm. And so having people register drones is overall good for the UAS integration and for the market.
Do we have any idea yet? It's probably too early to know how many drones were sold in the fourth quarter, you know, related to Christmas holiday sales, that sort of thing.
I have not seen anything on that yet, Mike, but it would be really interesting, right? Because they had about 700,000 the year before mm-hmm. that were sold, and you and I both saw a lot more drones in a lot more stores this year than we did last year, right?
Oh, yeah.
Not only that, but you've got some drones that have come down in price, making them even more accessible, and there's certainly a lot more manufacturers this year. So I would expect that more drones were sold over the Christmas holiday in 2017 than 2016.
Now, the Chinese still dominate the manufacturing side of that, right? Really, we don't have a lot of going on in the U.S., or has that changed?
Well, DJI is by far and away the market leader in both, recreational UAS and what are really a combination of professional and hobby drones. If you're talking about drones under $5,000, DJI is probably 75% of the market or more of all the drones sold. Mm. If you get into the higher end drones that are $100,000 up, that's a separate market, and there's companies that specialize in that that are not DJI. However, we don't expect to see any changes, Mike, in that market domination. There are new drones coming back into the market, new manufacturers who are entering drones into the market, but DJI is still the market leader. And the reason they are is because you can get more drone for your money from DJI than just about anywhere else. And the Chinese government subsidizes DJI so that it can offer more for less and capture that market share.
Something you said just fascinated me. Who on earth would use a drone costing more than $100,000?
Well,
there used to be some pretty big drones out there under 55 pounds, but still pretty big, that did a lot of interesting things for police and fire, law enforcement, for instance. They were $150,000 drones when you decked them out with all of the special gear and all of the, you know, the instruments that allowed you to do infrared, et cetera. Now, those drones don't make any sense anymore, and those drones are not worth half of what people paid for them because the technology from the bottom has come up, meaning that, you know, a lot of that high-end functionality is now baked into your $1,000, $2,000 drone. So there's not a lot of good reasons to want to go with the super high-end drones unless you've got a really special application. So, for instance, if you're doing, if you're trying to carry a significant amount of weight, over 55 pounds potentially, then you're going to need a special drone for that. So let's say you were want to do crop dusting and you wanted to spray crops and you wanted to hold more liquid, right? There are drones that are capable of doing that. Those drones are going to cost a lot of money, but you know, the price continues to come down. The functionality and technology, it continues to improve at that price. And that's why we're really seeing drones doing some special things. The big thing for 2018 in terms of the tech side of these amazing aircraft is things like artificial intelligence. So baking artificial intelligence into the drone and much more sophisticated sensors so that they can see and avoid objects, right? But right now, I can send my drone out to fly GPS waypoints. I can tell it to return home. I don't have to fly it. It's going to come home on its own. But imagine artificial intelligence baked into a drone fleet where One drone is out running a stretch of infrastructure of a pipeline. It detects with its infrared a problem with that stretch of pipeline. And then other drones know automatically without any human intervention to take off and to go to that spot and to start repairs. Hmm. That's where we're trying to get to. Where true automation is occurring. And, you know, and drones are out doing jobs in addition to just taking pictures, video, and capturing data. And we're starting to see a lot of traction in the AI space and the big data space for drones in 2018, and that is a trend that will just simply continue.
Well, it sounds like another book idea for me. I'm digging the show today. Yeah. I was fresh out of ideas, and everybody's giving me great ideas here.
Yeah, that's either fascinating or terrifying, or maybe a little bit
sure
of both.
Which, yeah,
right, to have automatic machine intelligence
you
like
open
that.
Your curtain in the morning, and all these drones are standing there outside your window waiting for you.
Yes,
you know?
So.
Bringing you coffee, Mike.
Okay.
Drones are not messing around. They are going to get these cream. There's going to be coffee, and you're not even going to have to leave the bedroom. It's going to come right to you.
Okay.
So, love it.
Hopefully these drones will be used for good, right? There's a lot of talk,
evil
and
drones.
There's even some federal legislation on privacy issues because we all know people are concerned about their privacy.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Well, it almost sounds, in terms of the technology and the price, that it's like electronics or cameras, kind of, in that the prosumer stuff is so good these days that you really don't need to go full pro on the hardware.
For a lot of applications, that's true. If you're doing filmmaking, you could still, for under $10,000, get the most sophisticated filmmaking equipment attached to a drone that you could ever need, right?
Yeah.
So I've always said, when you look at the amount of technology that goes into these aircraft at the price that you pay, it's astounding.
Yeah. So battery life play a part in this too? I'm sorry, Mike, I stepped on your question.
No, go ahead.
Okay. What are the trends in battery life in terms of keeping these things in the air longer?
So battery life is one of those issues that they're constantly working on, but the lithium polymer batteries, the same ones that they put in the Tesla automobile, et cetera, they really maxed out the technology there. So it's not like Moore's Law, where batteries are going to operate twice as long every, 2 years, it's going to double or what have you. That in the lithium polymer space is not likely to happen. So, in terms of batteries getting a little smaller, maybe, but in terms of battery life, to put a drone in the air for 30 minutes is still above average. But the interesting thing is that a drone in the air for 20 or 30 minutes is a very long time, much longer than you would expect. And there are still other ways to fuel a drone, including liquid fuel, right?
Right.
That can allow a drone to fly longer than that. There are drones with multiple batteries that can stay in the air for 50 minutes or longer, but they need to make improvements on that in order to really get full functionality for instance, beyond line of sight flights.
Well, even a low cost, so to speak, high quality drone, you're still in $1,000 area, right? That you're going to get an okay one?
Yeah, absolutely. You're going to get an amazing drone for $1,000 or less. You probably don't want to buy the latest and greatest right away because those tend to have glitches. But, wait a couple of months and then get the latest and greatest after the glitches get out, and you're going to end up with an amazing piece of machinery.
We're going to have to leave it at that, Enrico.
Okay, Enrico, how do people get in touch with you if they want more info?
Head on over to www.dronelaw.pro. We've got tons of information on the website. And, of course, our phone number is there. If anyone wants to give us a call, we talk to dozens of drone operators every week. And if we feel we can help you, we'll pitch you a project, give you a price, and you can say yes or no.
All right. Thanks very much, Enrico Schaefer. DroneLaw.pro is the address. I want to thank Enrico and all our guests today. Lawrence Tech Dean of Students Kevin Finn, cybersecurity expert Richard Steenan, social media expert Meili Oztale from somewhere in Europe, a secure undisclosed location.
Secure, sure. Very secure.
Yes,
yes,
indeed. So. Great show today, and Mike got a couple of new novel ideas out of it.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. I already jogged. I was writing and putting in my little notebook on my laptop.
All right, so. Before I forget. Right, yeah, I got to write it down right
away.
Yeah,
I'll forget. You know, I'm getting old. So.
All right, well, none of us are getting any younger, but yes. I can tell you we're having a heck of a lot of fun here at the M Squared TechCast, and we really do appreciate the folks at PodcastDetroit.com who make it possible.
Until, and, of course, Jessica. We can't forget Jessica, right?
Yeah. Aw, thanks, guys.
The peerless producer,
peerless,
Jessica. Yes, indeed. So until next week, we'll see you again next week at 3 p.m. That's, I think, our last week at 3 p.m.
Yeah, then
right?
We're going to 2.
Yeah, in 2 weeks from today, we're moving the show to 2 p.m. just because it's a whole lot easier for everybody's schedule. But for right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you've been listening to the M Squared TechCast.
Thanks for listening to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Join your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan, next Monday at 3 p.m. If you can't listen live, audio podcasts of the show can be found at PodcastDetroit.com.